This is Sophia.
And I'm Victoria.
You're listening to It's All History to Me, Auburn's History Radio Hour at 8 a.m. on Thursdays. Each week, we will interview a history professional with the theme of bridging the past and present.
Let's get started.
I am in a conventional dither with a conventional star in my eye. And you will note there's a lump in my throat when I...
Good morning, and welcome back to It's All History to Me. This morning, we are joined by Ms. Maven Beard, who has been serving as a manager of outreach programs at the Caroline Marshall Drawn Center for Arts and Humanities here at Auburn University since 2008. Ms. Beard earned her bachelor's in art history with a minor in anthropology from Emory University. In her current role, Ms. Beard is responsible for developing, implementing, and managing statewide arts and humanities outreach programs and initiatives. Working in the historic Scott Yarbrough House, or Pebble Hill, Ms. Beard also contributes to the curatorial and interpretive work being done at this site. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. All right, so to get our conversation started, how did you first get interested in history?
So I grew up in an old house about 20 minutes away from here in rural Chambers County. And so that sort of got me interested in yeah. old houses, which is cool. A theme in my life. But also we used to go kind of on walks in the evening along the dirt road, and we would find railroad spikes and pieces of pottery and sort of all these little traces of the past.
That's
kind
so
of
cool.
in our landscape. And that really kind of got me interested in thinking about the past around me. And I was also a big reader as a kid. So my mom always bought books on ancient cultures. And of course, the American Girl doll books were really formative in my childhood, thinking about the past in that way.
That's so cool. Yeah.
What inspired you to earn your bachelor's degree in art history?
So I went to college thinking I was going to be an archaeologist. I had done a couple of summers working with the Alabama Museum of Natural History. They have a summer expedition program doing archaeological digs. And I kind of thought, well, that's what I'm going to be. And then I got to college, and my first semester I took Art History 101, and that kind of changed everything for me. The intro class had different professors coming in and sort of presenting on their area of expertise. And I really found that what I wanted to do, thinking of archaeology and thinking about past cultures, I really could just do with art history.
Oh, yeah, that's so cool. Would you say that your study of anthropology and art history as an undergraduate has contributed to your current work?
Absolutely. I think anthropology sort of helps you think about people in the world around you. And art history, I think kind of the main thing that I took away from that is sort of the importance of context, right? That these pieces of art or pottery or whatever we were looking at didn't exist in a vacuum, and that there is sort of this whole story behind maybe the materials and the people who made them, and thinking about something that sort of has all of these different facets sort of in one thing. So yeah, that's really helped me.
Yeah, I like that. Ties into like the material culture sort of.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I took an art history class my freshman year, and it's amazing, like, people who like do art history and they work in the field, like how much information they have to convey in like a couple hundred words.
Oh, absolutely.
And be like, this is everything you need to know to like actually understand this, but you're not going to read like several pages worth of text.
Right.
It's hard.
What are some projects that you've gotten to implement as the manager of outreach programs at the Caroline Marshall Drawn Center for Arts and Humanities?
So we get to do a lot of different kinds of programs. We're an outreach office, and so we do a lot of programs here in Auburn, but we also work around the state with a lot of community partners, public libraries, historical societies, local museums. So some of the projects, we have something called the Drawn Seminars in State and Local History, and that's where we send a speaker out to different public libraries around the state to kind of talk on their expertise. Right now, it's Dr. Zinni Spond, who is a professor at Tuskegee, and she's doing a talk on memory quilts, which has been really fun. I also manage the Third Thursday Poetry Series that's also sponsored by the Department of English, and so we have poets come in once a month to do a reading. We do different symposia, so I've done them on Southern pottery, on the McKinney and Hall portraits of Creek leaders that we have at Pebble Hill. We did something on that. We also did one on quilts. We do lots of different book talks. We also have something called the Black Belt Treasures Holiday Market. That's every December. We're entering our fourth year, I think. And that's working with our community partner in Camden, Black Belt Treasures Cultural Arts Center, which helps sell artwork by artists in the Black Belt, and so it's a wonderful way to meet different artists, and it's at December, so you can buy some Christmas presents. And we also have something called Teaching Pebble Hill. We've worked a lot with local teachers, so Alabama history is taught in fourth grade.
Yeah.
And in 2020, we started working with Shannon Brandt, who's an instructional coach at Yarborough Elementary School, to help develop lesson plans that align with fourth grade social studies standards for the state of Alabama, but that also incorporate some aspect of Pebble Hill's history, or an artifact or something like that, to kind of give students that sort of local history aspect to realize that this history also happens in their own community.
That's so awesome. It seems like you get to do a little bit of everything working with people from a bunch of different
fields. Absolutely, yeah.
What does it look like for you to, like, start a project and need people to come and talk about something? Is it, like, the person that, I guess, you design the event around, or do you design the event around, or the person around the event?
It happens both ways. Sometimes it happens very organically. It's you just sort of meet someone, or, like, for example, Dr. Bond with the John Seminars, she was a speaker at a symposium that we did on quilts in Alabama,
yeah.
And so we were thinking who would be a good person to travel around the state, go to all these public libraries and rural communities, and she sort of came to mind.
Oh.
So, yeah, it really is all these different ways that something sort of happens. Sometimes
Cool.
It's very deliberate, and
right.
Sometimes it's a community partner might come to us and say, we want to do X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
And, yeah, sometimes it just kind of falls into our lap.
Oh, that's so cool.
What is the most surprising part about your job?
I don't know if it's necessarily surprising anymore, but I think, as you can see all the different kind of projects that we do, that no day is ever really the same.
Right.
It's not always sitting at my desk. Sometimes it's traveling around the state. I've gotten to see so much more of the state than I have.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in Alabama, and yet I feel like I see way more now working with different community partners. Sometimes it's digging in our garden outside, or it's setting up chairs for a program, or it's about to serve on a National Endowment for the Humanities Grant Review panel. So, I mean, it really is a very wide range of things that I do, which sometimes makes it hard to explain to people what my job exactly is.
Okay. Do you have a favorite memory from the years that you have been working at Auburn at Pebble Hill?
So last year we started a project working with a Muskogee artist named Mary Smith in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And that kind of came about because we were doing these having fourth grade students come to Pebble Hill, and we had one student point out in our hallway, we have all of these portraits of Creek men, Creek leaders. She's like, well, where are the women?
Yeah.
And we thought, okay, well, we need to find some way to somehow bring Creek women and Creek women's stories into Pebble Hill. And that sort of led us to connecting with John Beaver at the Council House Museum. And he connected us with Mary Smith, who's an artist out there, and she's a basket weaver, and she weaves a lot of baskets out of river cane. And we thought, well, wouldn't it be nice to have river cane from here and take it out to Oklahoma?
Yeah.
And so we met a guy named Bill Deutsch, who lives here in Auburn. He's a retired professor. And he's like, well, I have river cane in my backyard, in Lochapoka, along Hodnett Creek. And that led us to connecting with this man named Robert Hagens, who's a basket weaver from Op, Alabama. And we met Robert at Bill Deutsch's house and went to harvest some river cane.
Wow.
I was there with the camera to kind of document it all. Thinking, oh, we'll just, you know, walk down to a path and cut some cane. And it was not quite that. It was actually sort of going through trees and jungles and being down in the mud.
Yeah.
But it was so much fun to be there and see that cane harvested.
Yeah.
And then he prepared it. And last May, Mark and Erica and I, or my coworkers, we all went out to Oklahoma and delivered that to Mary. And she wove a mat for us that now
That's
we have
amazing.
Hanging in Pebble Hill. So it's fun to kind of see that and think about the whole process that it took in order to have that there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great story. And so neat how it's connecting both sides of the history that exists
absolutely.
That Pebble Hill
mm-hmm.
tells.
Yeah.
Okay. How does your work tie into our theme this semester of bridging the past and the present?
I love that theme. And I think a lot of it is sort of reflecting on our collective experiences and sort of creating a dialogue in communities. And something like the River Cane project, it is sort of bridging past and present because it's it's a modern creation that we have, but it's using these these methods that come from the past. And Mary Smith sort of has a whole history of working these kind of indigenous methods of creating art. And so, yeah, I think it really is sort of, we say a lot in our mission statement is sort of helping to reflect on the human experience. And I think a lot of that is helping to bridge the past and the present.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. We're going to take an ad break, but we'll see you in 2 minutes. Welcome back to It's All History to Me. This morning, we are joined by Ms. Maven Beard from Auburn University's Caroline Marshall Drawn Center for Arts and Humanities at Pebble Hill. For this next segment, we'd like to highlight Ms. Beard's extensive experiences in public history. So for our listeners who might not be aware, how would you define public history?
So I think public history, one of the easiest ways to think about it is it's history outside of the classroom. Right. But I think it's also sort of the history that's consumed by the general public, whether it's, you know, like programs that we do or in a museum setting or something like that. It's sort of the non-academic history.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to think about it, of outside the classroom. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What part of the public is the target audience for your work?
It really depends on the program, but it's really seeing the general public around Alabama, but, you know, it's sort of people in communities that we work with. Here in Auburn, I think we tend to have a really good intergenerational audience.
Oh, yeah.
Anywhere from students to, you know, there's Ollie at Auburn, the lifelong learning program, and so we sort of get kind of a broad range of ages come to our programs, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
How does your work as an outreach associate connect to the mission of public history?
I think a lot of it is in our center, it's kind of connecting the academic community with the general public. So we sort of live in that liminal space between the two and sort of use the resources of the university to do these programs that are outside and to kind of build connections with people and places and between people and places. And so it is sort of that outside of the classroom, general public kind of stuff.
Right, right. Okay, so we talked about this a little bit earlier, but what would you say is the best way to describe your job to someone who is new to the field of public history?
So a lot of what I kind of tell people is Auburn is a land-grant institution, so there's extension service, and we're sort of like extension, but for the arts and humanities.
Oh, yeah.
And so it really is sort of taking resources from the university out into different communities, the forks at the creek, as Dr. Wilson likes to call it.
Yeah.
But sort of what are those places? How can we use sort of our institution to build capacity in other communities to kind of do their own programming? Because we don't just want to come in and do a program and then have that be it. We want to kind of work with these communities to build their own capacity to start doing a lot of this on their own.
Yeah, that's neat. So in addition to bringing resources to present, you also bring the backbone, I guess, and kind of to apply that.
Absolutely, yeah.
How did you learn to be an implementer of public history?
So when I first started working in Auburn, I was able to start taking classes. And so I took an introduction to public history class many years ago. And sort of that kind of, a lot of ways brought into focus a lot of my interest.
Sort of
it defined everything as, actually what I'm really interested in is public history. That's something that kind of all of these different parts of my job and my life, I'm like, This is a word for it. But then the rest of it has really just been through my work, a lot of it through professional development or going to conferences. So the American Association for State and Local History is a conference that I like going to and sort of doing some of their webinars and online programs sort of to help think through a lot of maybe the issues in our field or kind of give me some of those tools to help work my job.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. was there a certain class that you took in your undergraduate years? I guess, well, your introduction to public history might be it. Any other ones that largely help you, like, develop a particular skill or something like that that you use today?
I did take a class, an art history class, that was cross-listed as art history and geology.
Oh.
And so it was the art and geology of Costa Rica.
Oh, wow.
And so that was kind of fun to think about. I mean, like I said earlier, you know, this art doesn't exist in a vacuum. And
yeah.
So to really learn how to understand where things come from and maybe how things are made.
Right.
And I think, you know, now in my job, it's important to think about communities or people or places don't exist in a vacuum, and that
right.
there's this whole sort of history and creation behind them.
Yeah.
And it's helpful to think about it in that way.
Yeah, good point, good point.
Was that, like, focusing on, like, I guess, like, clay and, like, how rocks are, like, kind of made, I guess?
Yeah, a lot of, in Costa Rica, there are a lot of volcanoes, and so looking a lot of, like, volcanic rock, greenstone was used a lot, but then also, yeah, clay and that kinds of thing.
Wow.
So really all of, at Emory, we have something called the Michael C. Carlos Museum, which is an art and archaeology museum, and they have a really extensive ancient American collection.
Oh.
And so it was nice to be able to go and see some of these art pieces in person, and then go and understand from a geologist
That's
where
so
some
cool.
of the stuff comes from.
Yeah. And neat that you were able to have the process of, like, seeing it and then learning about it instead of, like, the other way. Cause,
absolutely.
Yeah. I'm sure with a lot of other of those, like, I guess, classic art history pieces you think of, it's hard to actually see the real
thing.
Yeah,
there's things I'll probably never see in my life.
Yeah.
But that probably would be helpful to you.
Right, right.
Is there a specific branch of history your work tends to be centered around?
I think thinking about, honestly, local history, thinking about state history, a lot of the things that we do, we are working with these local historical societies and public libraries and people who are really passionate about their communities.
Right.
And I'm a big advocate for people doing local history and sort of understanding the communities that they live in. And beyond that, think sort of Southern history in general, I think,
right.
is really important to kind of help understand the context
yeah,
that we're in.
Neat. Yeah. So then would you say, like, I guess the source base that you work with is probably more the individual people themselves and not, like, a specific particular, like, document set or something like that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. It really is sort of communities and people or sort of the, what we work with.
That's so neat. Is there, like, I guess, like, a Rolodex of people that you'd, like, tend to, like, gravitate towards, or are they just, like, popping up from any different background?
I think we definitely have sort of a community of people around the state that we tend to work with more. And then also it's always fun to approach new communities and to sort of build new relationships with people and to kind of see where that takes us.
Yeah, that's neat. That's neat.
Looking, like, to the future, is there anything you're hoping, like, Pebble Hill expands into or wants to, like, adapt to, I guess?
I mean, I really think our work with teachers is really important.
Mm-hmm.
This summer we're hosting a teacher workshop through the Alabama History Institutes, which the Alabama Department of Archives and History manages. And they're really workshops for teachers to help them figure out how to use primary sources in their classrooms.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really important to find ways that we can support teachers to help them figure out how to maybe teach some of the more difficult history that the history of Pebble Hill can help with.
Mm-hmm.
But also teachers are great, and we want to be able to support them and to support students learning local history and to appreciate the community that they're in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For your projects that, I guess, are outside for, I guess, the general public, for those, do you tend to see that it takes a couple iterations for more people to start engaging and coming to the events, or is it pretty much an immediate, like, positive attendance response, if that makes sense?
No, sometimes it kind of depends on the subject. There are certain things that people are immediately attracted to, but also I think it is building relationships and making sure that you're sort of working in tandem with people,
right.
And that, you know, you're kind of helping it that way, because Yeah, sometimes it does take a little while to maybe to earn trust in communities and to maybe find the right people, because sometimes you don't always find the right people at first.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of patience, I think, required sometimes in doing these programs, and a lot of relationship building. And, you know, a lot of times we don't just send someone to a community. We might have to show up there. We might have to talk to someone multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
Just to kind of, you know, make sure that we're kind of all working in, on it together. And it's not just, we're not just coming in and saying, we're Auburn University, we're going to do this. It's sort of making sure that we're also learning from that community and making it more of a reciprocal relationship.
Yeah, that's so impressive they're able to do that and be something that's outreach, just like you're saying, in a specific, like, I guess, humanities lens.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What is your favorite project that you have ever coordinated in your current role?
I have a lot of favorite projects, but one that comes to mind is a symposium that I coordinated a couple of years ago now, called Every Stitch a Story, and it was on quilts in Alabama and the stories that they tell. And so we had mentioned Dr. Zenise Bond came and presented on memory quilts. We had Gail Andrews, who's the former director of the Birmingham Museum of Art, give us this wonderful overview of the history of quilts in Alabama. And then we had two really world-class quilters, Yvonne Wells and Winnie McQueen, who came to display some quilts they had created with the Sew Their Names project, which everyone should Google. It's a really fascinating project. But to have their work on display there was really amazing. But also, we encouraged other people to bring quilts that maybe were important to them, that had a story. And so we had this wonderful day of people bringing in these quilts and talking about the stories that they told, and learning about quilts. But then also, I think really the story of quilts are the stories of communities and the people that made them. And so it was just a really fun day to, to be together with that group.
Yeah, that sounds so fun and such a neat way to be able to tie in the community with having them bring their own quilts as well.
Yeah.
Because I remember when we toured Pebble Hill, we saw a picture of that one quilt that's made.
Yes, the crazy quilts. Yeah, we actually had that on display in the hallway.
Wow.
Stays at the Alabama Department of Archives and History, but we were able to have it on loan and have it on display. And it was kind of the first time that it had been back in Pebble Hill since it had been finished at Pebble Hill in the 1950s. So that was really special too.
Yeah, that's neat.
We're going to take an ad break, but we'll see you in 2 minutes.
Good morning, and welcome back to It's All History to Me. If you're just joining us this morning, Ms. Maven Beard from Auburn University's Caroline Marshall Drawn Center for the Arts and Humanities at Pebble Hill has been sharing with us more about the impact of her work that she does at the center's as the center's assistant director for outreach programs, or manager for outreach programs. Sorry about that. So for this segment, we are hoping to talk a little bit more about the work that you do as the commissioner for the City of Auburn Historic Preservation Commission.
So,
what is your work in both or in this role entail?
So the Auburn's Historic Preservation Commission, we work with the City of Auburn. We maintain the historic district in Auburn, which is along North College Street, sort of starting at the depot and going towards Drake Avenue. And we really help sort of with planning and design projects, and any sort of project like that that can be seen from the public right away is essentially what we look at. And so we work with homeowners and architects to sort of issue certificates of appropriateness for something if they're making a major change to their house, just to make sure that we sort of keep the historical integrity of the historic district.
Yeah. So tying back into that historical houses.
Absolutely, yeah.
What are the products of the work of the City of Auburn Historic Preservation Commission?
So it's really maintaining that historic district and its integrity, and working with the homeowners. And we meet once a month if there's sort of a project that needs our review. There are a lot of different things that the planning staff at Auburn can just sign off on, like paint colors or something that. But if it's anything that's maybe a little more intensive, like changing a window or a door or maybe building an addition, something like that, we've had several of those come through in the past maybe 5-6 years that I've been on the commission, just to make sure that it is something that we feel is appropriate for the character of the house, but also for the character of the district. So our historic district has a lot of different styles of architecture. It's not just kind of one style. And so kind of thinking through how does it look to sort of start changing things, knowing that, you know, people, this is 2024 and that the needs of people and their homes have changed since some of those houses were built. But still, how can we maintain some of that look and character so that you can drive through the historic district and still get a sense of the historic homes?
Yeah. Is there a particular like standard that you use to like reference back to for when you're making those decisions on if the changes are like standing with the integrity of the original?
Yeah. We have sort of design review guidelines. And so that includes everything from, like I said, the paint colors, doors, windows, the materials that you might use, to the landscape, you know, maybe or trees. You know, you just can't go cut down every tree in your yard without sort of us thinking through some of those issues. So, yeah, we sort of have that. Those guidelines are kind of what we go by. And sometimes there is sort of some debate over, you know, I think a lot of it can be left up to interpretation. And so it's sort of us thinking through, what do we think is going to be the best for future generations, essentially.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. Is there a lot of crossover between the work you do as a commissioner for the City of Auburn Historic Preservation Commission and your role at the Center for Arts and Humanities?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways it's the community that I'm working with the commission and with my job at the center. And then it's also, you know, thinking through the sort of historical appropriateness and sort of, I think buildings and landscapes are kind of the stories of our communities. And so how best to preserve those kind of in both ways. And I think it's also the kind of people that I get to work with. So the Alabama Historical Commission in Montgomery is sort of the people that the State Historic Preservation Office that we get to work with. And there's also a community here of architects and historians. And so there's definitely a lot of crossover when it comes to people that can maybe help us think through some of these things or that I get to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the biggest difference between each of your roles?
I think for the Historic Preservation Commission, it's much more here's the guidelines that we have to follow, and I think it's much more strict in terms of what we can and can't do. And it's sort of very honored to be appointed from the City of Auburn and be on that commission. But yeah, sometimes it can be very difficult to have some of those conversations with people, or sometimes, you know, want to disappoint homeowners, but sometimes they can't always do what they want to do. And so, yeah, I think it's a little more strict in terms of some of those things.
Yeah. Who are some of the other people that serve on that commission?
So we have Gorham Bird, who's in the architecture school here at Auburn. We have some of the homeowners that live in the district are on that commission. And then we also have some people just in the community that are interested in historic preservation. So it's one of the City of Auburn has several boards and commissions that citizens can be appointed to. And I found out about this one through many years ago. They hosted something called the Citizens Planning Academy, where it was kind of a months-long program where we got to learn about the planning department and the planning process and zoning and all of these different kinds of things that are quite fascinating when it comes to how our communities are kind of laid out and how they grow and develop. And so I found out about the Historic Preservation Commission through that. and was able to apply and be appointed. So yeah, I would encourage anyone to look, you know, in your community, there might be these things out there that you can apply and sort of participate in your local government.
How cool.
Yeah. What has been the most rewarding part of holding these two positions?
I feel like a broken record at this point, but I think it really is sort of working with people and working with communities. I've been doing this for what seems like a shocking amount of time, but I sort of really have this very special community of people around the state that I get to work with and that I get to see. So I also work with the Alabama Historical Association, and so we'll have our annual meeting in April, and the best part of those meetings are getting to see all the people from around the state that I've gotten to know. And so it really is all of these relationships that I've built in my time both here and on the commission, and getting to have people that can always bounce ideas off of or work with or just have fun with. So it's definitely rewarding.
Absolutely. Okay, so how would you say that our theme, again, connecting the past to the present, applies to this specific role in particular with the city of Auburn?
I think a lot about sort of preservation, sort of being helping communities have a sense of place. And so these houses tell stories. Just using Pebble Hill as an example, you know, it was built, it was 100 acres surrounding it, and now it's feels like it's in the middle of town.
Right.
And so thinking about how these landscapes have changed over time, you know, you can use something like Pebble Hill as a lens to help understand the story of Auburn and sort of thinking about, you know, this is how what we are in the present, but how did we get here? And how did that community change over time in order for us to be where we are now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What is it like to work also with the Alabama Historic Association?
It's a lot of fun. So we're a volunteer-run organization. It was founded in 1947, and we do two meetings a year. And so it's one of those ways that I get to travel around the state and do different things. So like I said, we're going to Huntsville for our annual meeting in April. In the fall, we usually do like a pilgrimage to a smaller town that's more just like a one-day kind of program of a talk and some tours.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really helped me get to know the state better, to get to see all of these different things that I would not have been able to see. A lot of times on tours, we'll be able to go to homes or places that, you know, I just couldn't go as a member of the general public. So that's always really fun. Mm-hmm. And get to work with a lot of fun people. But yeah, I think it really is just helping to understand more about the state that I grew up in and live in and sort of hearing all of those stories, whether it's at a tour or at our annual meeting where people are doing paper presentations on some aspect of Alabama history.
Yeah.
It's sort of fun to get to learn a little bit every time.
Yeah, yeah. Is there any story in particular that you especially remember sticks out as a moment in Alabama history you didn't know about before?
Ooh, that's a good question. I feel like when we, and Sophia, you were there at our pilgrimage in Sylacauga. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd always sort of heard about Sylacauga as sort of the Marble City and I guess having some abstract idea of some of these quarries, but not really understanding the impact that those quarries had on that community.
Right.
And that even today, you know, it's still, it was very disheartening to learn that now this beautiful marble is being ground up and used in like toothpaste
right.
and stuff, where in the past it's, you know, all making all these buildings and stuff like that.
Right.
But yeah, it is just something like that where a guy might have an abstract idea about something, but then to actually go and see it and sort of learn a little more about it.
Yeah.
It's always fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was interesting because I remember like at the beginning they were doing like important parts of like Sylacauga's history. And they told this story about a woman who was like struck by an asteroid.
Yes, yes.
And I was just like shocked because I was like, I've never heard about this. And this, like, Sylacauga is really not that far from like where I grew up. So I'm like, this is crazy.
Oh, yeah. You can. That is, it's the meteors on display at the Alabama Museum of Natural History in Tuscaloosa. If you ever go, you can see the meteor. And when you look at it, you're like, it's not that big, but I mean, it did fall from the sky.
Right.
It's quite heavy. So
yeah.
No, I love, that's a fascinating story.
Yeah.
And then we had Ruth Cook on a couple,
yes,
I guess last season, to hear about her work with the Silicaga marbles. So that was really, really fascinating too. And like she was saying, how it's evolved the use of the marble into, from structures and sculptures to more like the practical things where it's hidden in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You never know that you're brushing your teeth with Silicaga marble.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to take an ad break, but we'll see you in 2 minutes. Hello, and welcome back to It's All History to Me. We're about to start our last section with our trivia questions. So are you ready?
Yes.
Woo!
We wanted to focus them on like Auburn and Alabama history. So our first question is Birmingham, Alabama is also known as what?
So I have two answers.
Yes.
One is the Magic City, but also during the Civil Rights Movement, it was known as Bombingham.
Ah. The answer we did was the Magic City. Birmingham earned this name due to its rapid growth from the 19th century to the early 20th century. It has also been referred to as the Pittsburgh of the South.
Do you have any background on the second name for it?
Yeah, there's a really great book. I can't remember the title now. I think the title might actually be called Bombingham.
Oh, yeah.
But it is sort of about the Civil Rights Movement in Birmingham and sort of the proliferation of bombing people.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Huh. And our second trivia question, why is Auburn called Auburn?
So it's named after an Oliver Goldsmith poem.
Exactly.
I think the poem is Auburn, Sweet Auburn. And Judge John Harper, who's sort of credited with founding the town of Auburn, asked his daughter, what should we name this new place? She probably just read the poem and said, let's call it Auburn because it's the loveliest village on the plain.
Yes, exactly. That's what we found, too, that its name comes from the sweet Auburn described in Oliver Goldsmith's poem, The Deserted Village.
That's what it's called, yes.
Yeah, cool. So we always wrap up our hour with two questions that we ask our guests. So our first one for you is, why is it important that we study history?
I think studying history helps us kind of understand the world that we live in and reflect on our experiences and the human experience. And it also helps kind of preserve these stories of past generations that are important to help connect us to the past and to our own history.
Yeah.
And for our last question of the hour, what advice do you have for current and future students of political science or of history?
I kind of have two answers. One, the first one actually comes from Dr. Gaddis, who talked to us about the importance of reading. So I know in a lot of history and political science classes, you already read a lot for class, but I think it's really important to read outside of class and to read for fun, because I just think the more that you read, you're going to be a better writer, I think a better thinker. It helps you kind of maybe understand different people, different points of view. And I also just really love reading for fun.
Yeah.
And so when he said that, I was like, okay, great. So I can take classes and I can still read on the side and I just don't have to read history books.
Right.
I think my other advice would sort of to become involved in your community. So whether that's like attending city council meetings or just kind of keeping up with city council meetings or programs at the public library, or if you're here in Auburn, programs at the Center for Arts and Humanities at Pebble Hill. I think it's really important to be an engaged citizen and to kind of understand what's happening in your local community, and also what's happening in your kind of statewide community. But I think a lot of things that happen in your local community are only going to affect maybe state political things or national political things. And so I think the more you can be involved in the place that you're in and sort of learning about that community, I think it's only going to help you sort of think through some of the issues in sort of like political science and history.
Oh, yeah, that's such a good advice.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Yeah, yes, to wrap up our thank yous, of course, first to Miss Maven Beard. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And thank you to the Caroline Marshall Drawn Center for the Arts and Humanities at Pebble Hill for their constant support and for all that you all do there to keep spreading history.
Thank you.
And thank you to the History Department here at Auburn University as a whole as well. And, of course, our faculty advisor, Dr. Schultz. Thank you to the Honors College for their support as well. We've been talking with them a little bit about doing a feature here, so thanks to them. Thank you to the College of Liberal Arts as a whole and Weagle as well for our airtime. And thank you, listeners, for your support, because without you, we couldn't have a show.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to It's All History to Me, the show dedicated to exploring the people, places, and ideas of our past. Be sure to tune in next Thursday at 8 a.m. for more. But for now, keep it here on Weagle 91.1.
See you next time!